And good morning. It's 10 o'clock. Time once again for the Kenai Conversation here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai and Soldotna. Wonderful to have you with us this morning. I'm your host, Shaylin Cochran, and a great show coming up for you over the next hour. We've got in the studio this morning Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Mike Navar and his Chief of Staff, Larry Persley, both joining us in the studio. Gentlemen, good morning, and thanks so much for being here.
Good morning, Shaylin.
Good morning.
And so much to talk about. I'm not even afraid of coming anywhere close to being able to squeeze it all into an hour, but that's why we're here. We're going to have a great discussion. We would love to have you in on that conversation as well. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, give us a call. 690-1687 is the number. All sorts of stuff to talk about, but what I wanted to get rolling with first, some news coming out of the last borough assembly meeting, and it's made a couple of headlines. Had a brief story about it here at KDLL. The things at the hospital, and I wanted to get off on the topic of healthcare to start off with, and kind of going back, we'll take a quick step back. You know, in your Mayor Navar, in your run for office this time around, one of the things you campaigned on was a healthcare task force and getting that together and trying to figure out ways to sort of rein in healthcare spending and make it more sustainable over the long haul. And what's going on? How is the borough's healthcare system such as it is? And what are the sorts of conversations that are going on right now to ensure that amid the mess of healthcare that we're seeing at the federal and state levels, that we can continue to have services here on the peninsula?
Well, and I think that's one of the goals that we have seen both of the hospitals that the borough owns, the South Peninsula Hospital and Central Peninsula Hospital. There's also a hospital in Seward that's owned by the city of Seward that they manage by Providence. So that's one of the things that we've been trying to accomplish over the last six or seven or even longer than that, dating back to the 90s, is try to get more services here on the peninsula, because it's not that the dollars are not going to be spent. It's just that they're being spent elsewhere. And so if we can capture some of that, keep it on the peninsula, capture some of those services and provide some of those services here. And we've seen that, you know, with radiology, oncology, that's been great, because before that service was put in place here, people had to travel to Anchorage for sometimes what was 10 or 30 seconds of radiation treatment for cancer. And we wish nobody would get cancer, but in this case, having the service available here is better for the patient, better for the family. It saves money, and it keeps those dollars in the community. So that's been one of the goals, is to try to keep from out-migrating services, seeing them go someplace else. That's one of the efforts that we're doing now. There are Central Peninsula Hospitals in the process of putting in a certificate of need for a new project at the hospital that the assembly has already agreed to. It's going to be done with revenue bonds if we get a certificate of need, and that's for the cath lab, and that relates to people who have strokes or heart issues can get their treatment here on the peninsula. Initially, it will save lives, and it generates significant revenues to the hospital. And it's not that those, if you got a heart problem and you're having heart treatment, that's going to happen someplace anyway, and a lot of times it's happening either in Anchorage or out of state, and this will allow it to be done here on the Kenai Peninsula. So the reaction time in terms of getting the service is important to people's lives and their recovery. So if we can get it here, it would be great. Now, Central Peninsula Hospital is, and even South Peninsula Hospital, you know, we keep expecting to see this downturn in the economy, and downturns in the economy, which we're seeing a contracting economy, that affects all aspects of the economy, including people's ability to expend money on healthcare. And so I think that's part of it. The other part of it is sort of as the state is focusing on their budget issues, they're trying to find ways to tighten up on some of the programs, the Medicaid program at the state level, reimbursements from Medicare. We have a significant senior population here. In fact, ours is, or was, and I think it still is, the fastest growing senior population as a percentage of our overall population in the state. And part of that's due to the fact that we have great services here, but also have the most generous of senior exemption program for property taxes. So
So, you know, you mentioned some adjustments that are anticipated being made at the state level for Medicaid, and those taken in conjunction with changes on the national scene. You know, how hard is it? When you talk about expanding services at the Central Peninsula Hospital, these are major capital investments that need to be thought of years in advance. How difficult is it to plan out and sort of be able to know accurately what the sorts of services you're going to need 5, 10, 20 years down the road when the landscape looks like is the mess it is now, and you're trying to prepare for the future? How are you able to do that with such an unsure sort of world that you're working in?
Well, we know that despite the recent sort of economic contraction, the state of Alaska and the Kenai Peninsula have a very, very bright future. And so we need to plan for the long term. And I think that's what we're doing. And we need to keep in mind, too, that, you know, the Kenai Peninsula is the size of many small states. I think if the Kenai Peninsula itself, the area of the Kenai Peninsula was a state, it'd be like the 10th or 11th smallest state. So we'd be bigger than 10,
right.
10 states. So we have to keep that in mind when we talk about the facilities and the services that are here. We have a very small population, but we're geographically isolated from the other healthcare facilities. You know, it's either a helicopter ride or a 3-hour ride in an ambulance to Anchorage, to those hospitals. And so we need to make sure that we have some of the services that are available here, get the infrastructure in place, which is what we've been doing, get the infrastructure in place so that we have it set up before we see sort of the major changes in healthcare, because once that happens, it'll be difficult to get some of those services located here and to pay for some of that infrastructure. So I think we're on the front edge of it. I think that if we can get this cath lab in place, that will generate some revenues. And then we're structured and set up so that it's Central Peninsula Hospital is more like a regional hospital. And it makes sense because, as I said, we're, you know, 150 or 60 miles by road to the nearest hospital that would otherwise have some of those services. So I think that we're on the right track. But boy, healthcare is surely going to see some changes because it's still not sustainable.
Well, it turns out healthcare is quite complicated, as we've heard. And one thing that I'm curious about, and forgive me because I've been out of town for a little bit, but you know, there have been for years and years kind of talk about how do you combine the services and try to cut costs between the two or the three hospitals on the peninsula. And what are those conversations like now? Or, I mean, in terms of trying to share costs and find ways to lower costs as one hospital sort of absorb another one. How do those conversations happen in terms of looking toward the future?
Well, and part of the goal I had, I guess, with the healthcare task force was to try to sort of push those things forward, try to force some economies and some efficiencies. And I guess what I determined is that there's a lot of, support for the status quo. And that's what we ran into, is there's a lot of vested interest in healthcare, where the dollars are going now. And so it makes it difficult to affect change. I think we were successful, the task force was successful in trying to get better communication and cooperation between Central Peninsula Hospital and South Peninsula Hospital. I think those things are happening. They're doing some joint buying. They're looking at ways that they can support support each other. They're communicating better. But in the long run, I think those decisions are going to be driven by the payers. And the payers are mostly government. At the state level, at the federal level, about 2/3 of all the health care costs in the country are paid for by government at one level or another. And so that's significant. Private payers also, as they see costs of health care go up, it becomes a bigger and bigger component of their overall budgets. And that's something that either they go to higher deductible plans, which means a transfer of the costs to the employee, or in order to try to save money. And I've seen that in our company. That, you know, we have Arby's restaurants. I've seen that in our company, and we kept going to higher and higher deductibles because the cost of the premiums kept going up and up. And by the way, I looked at it, and before the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, the rates actually went up higher than they have over the last 5 or 6 years. So it's a concern, but I think that, I guess, finding, I think it's going to be driven simply by by as we see efforts at the state and federal level to reduce the cost of those programs, which is difficult because we have a growing population and, more importantly, a growing senior demographic, and mm-hmm. so they utilize more of the services. So I think those are going to be driven by efforts to find efficiencies and to reduce the overall costs in a Medicaid program. And when you talk about cutting costs in healthcare, one of the things that's been identified for years and years is overutilization. Too many tests, too many x-rays, too many procedures, et cetera. And I think as the focus on that gets more, I guess the scrutiny gets higher, eventually they'll have to say, we're going to start rationing, or maybe not rationing is a good word, although for overutilization, it certainly makes sense. I think what they're going to say is we're going to focus more on that and seek more justification about why you're doing things instead of just shelling out the money that it costs. And that's going to affect hospitals. It's going to affect all the providers. And we have a great provider community. We have a lot of good doctors and other ancillary types of facilities, physical therapists, occupational therapists, chiropractors, all of the various types of healthcare. We got a great healthcare community, but it's exceedingly expensive. If you look at some of the state studies that have been done by the Institute of Social and Economic Research, we probably spend in excess of $10 billion a year in Alaska. And on the Kenai Peninsula, that's probably $800 million a year by my estimates. That's a lot of money for healthcare. Healthcare is important, but we're going to price ourselves out of the ability to afford it.
Right. Joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation, Borough Mayor Mike Navarre. We're talking about healthcare right now. Tons of other topics on the docket as well. Chief of Mayor Navarre's staff, Larry Persley, in the studio with us as well. Want to continue this healthcare discussion for just a moment and also give out the number. 690-1687 is the number if you'd like to jump in on the talk this morning. Again, 690-1687. And, you know, talking about the effort to rein in costs, that's a nice way of saying we want to spend less on healthcare. When you begin spending less on healthcare in the system that we have, when that squeeze comes down, a fewer dollars available, be it from the state, federal government, whatever, somebody has to bear the brunt of that. Who's the loser in the current system that we have, and do they deserve it? Is it seniors? Is it folks with a lower income? Is it the insurance companies? Are they the losers in this because they're an easy target?
Yeah, I think we're still trying to figure that out.
Right.
Who is going to be the losers? But the reality is that some years ago, our health care system sort of became a hybrid between delivery and of health care and an economic model that sort of tries to maximize revenues. And so it's a blend of that right now. And that means that a lot of times healthcare is driven by the business decision components of it, such as, you know, if you're a doctor and you have your own x-ray equipment in your office. Well, statistics have shown that then utilization of those x-rays or those machines and the procedures that are provided go up significantly as a result of it being there. Is that because of the need of the patient or because the revenue that they generate? And that's some of the things I think that's going to result in more scrutiny in healthcare is what procedures are being done, what tests are being done, are they being done for a legitimate medical purpose, or is there a component of it that is driven by generating revenue, and that will be the first area that gets squeezed. You know, you raised a good point because when you look at all the economic analysis that we've seen in the state about the current recession that we're in and the jobs that are being lost, et cetera, the single big bright spot is always, but healthcare, employment and healthcare is going up. But healthcare and the ability to pay for healthcare is significantly dependent on the economy and having a good, strong economy. So this contraction is going to catch up with healthcare too. And so that's something that we have to recognize is that healthcare depends significantly on a strong economy. And right now, I think we're going to start seeing that trend change a little bit. And as you saw at the hospital, when revenues start declining, then that means you have to start making decisions about expenses also.
And I wanted to touch briefly on things at this at Central Peninsula Hospital. Again, 690-1687 is the number if you'd like to hop in on the conversation this morning. Again, going back to the most recent borough assembly meeting and the financial report coming out of Central Peninsula Hospital, seeing a very dramatic drop in some revenues coming in, and that being an effect of the Affordable Care Act and other things. And this kind of going back to the idea that in terms of the goal of lowering healthcare costs or not spending as much money on healthcare, in that sense, parts of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare have certainly worked, but that hasn't always served smaller hospitals, local hospitals, particularly well.
Yeah, there's, we'll see what happens at the federal level, because a lot of the revenues at the state or at the at our local hospitals are from Medicaid and Medicare, both largely dependent on federal spending. So, but the other thing that we need to keep in mind with this most recent report is it's a snapshot. And if you look back over the years of Central Peninsula Hospital, you'll see a quarter occasionally that where revenues are down, and then it'll catch back up. And it might be, it could be any number of things, including the types of procedures that are done, the medical community went on vacations or things like that. So, we're looking at, we'll look at those numbers sort of on on a quarterly basis, but also sort of look at what the annualized returns are. The returns to the hospital have been very good for the last several years. It's allowed us to build up a reserve fund. Some of those funds will go into hospital expansion. It's very well managed in terms of the costs associated with different types of procedures. We just saw that also at the last assembly meeting, is that they did some comparisons, and Central Peninsula compares favorably, not just with hospitals in Alaska, where we're cheaper than most of the hospitals in Alaska, including the large ones in Anchorage, on a number of different procedures, but also we compete fairly well on a federal level, and that's something that we're going to have to do, and why it makes sense to try to make sure that we keep as many services here as possible, because that just gets you to an economy of scale that helps your ability to operate.
Growing or you're dying. to boil it down maybe a bit too much. The Kenai Conversation, joining us this morning, Borough Mayor Mike Navarre, Chief of Staff for his office, Larry Persley, also in studio with us. 690-1687 is the number if you'd like to jump in on the conversation. I want to move from healthcare into the other hot topic that's always bubbling and brewing around here, and that's the AK LNG project. And I want to hit on that specifically, but I also hope to kind of talk more broadly about sort of the overall energy landscape and how that is affecting the Kenai Peninsula Borough and the economics of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. As we look at the borough's budget that will be up for a vote on June 6th, I believe, or up for another public hearing on June 6th, one of the things that we know is that investment from oil and gas development around Cook Inlet, that's kind of begun to level off a little bit, and the Kenai Peninsula Borough has been a major benefactor of those investment dollars over the last many years, and those are kind of leveling off. And so just to kind of start off, as you see this coming, what are some things, I guess, in the closing months of your administration, how do you kind of process this and try to set this up so that, the debate is framed in a certain way, or that things are on the table to start thinking about, life after this most recent boom that we've seen on the Kenai?
Well, the most recent boom that we've seen really, the Kenai Borough has benefited from seeing assets placed in Cook Inlet, additional drilling rigs, et cetera. And if you look back to the beginning of my administration back in 2011 and compare it to now, the oil and gas properties have gone up about $600 million. I think that's a good number over that period of time. And that's significant. And so one of the things that for both the service areas and for the borough is recognizing that those assets have gone up, but this is a declining field. There's still a lot of oil and gas in Cook Inlet, no question, but this field is 50 plus years old. And so we've seen some significant decline since oil production peaked in Cook Inlet, which was in the late 70s. So we've already seen the peak. We're going to see a continual decline. We're going to find more gas. But long-term, we have to be cautious and not count on the types of increases that we've seen in oil and gas properties over the last, really, 10 years. That's not like, in fact, I'm confident that we won't see that out into the future. And so we have to recognize that and make sure that we don't spend to the level of what those oil and gas property values are, that we make sure that we're looking long-term and managing appropriately.
And yeah, Larry, personally, a man who has had his eye on oil and gas issues for a long, long time.
Too long. So long that, as far as the healthcare debate goes, I'm on Medicare now.
You didn't need to give that much away.
No, that's fine. I don't mind.
How do you see this plane landing?
But sort of building on what the mayor said, a lot of that increased property tax value that we're seeing in the Kenai Borough, those decisions were made several years ago. We're talking about Blue Crest Energy in the Cosmopolitan field, mm-hmm. down by Anchor Point, talking about the new platform that Fury put in. Those decisions were made when oil prices were twice what they are now. Those were made in the days of $100 a barrel oil, and those were made in the days when the state had a very rich, I guess, rich you could call, credit program, where they put forth hundreds of millions of dollars in tax credits. Some people call them subsidies, some call them tax credits, some call them incentives, but the state was helping to pay for those investments that we saw in Cook Inlet. The state has now cut off further tax credit investments, and oil prices are half of where they are. So as the mayor pointed out, you're not going to see over the next several years the kind of investments we saw in the previous few years, which means you're going to have a leveling off of that oil and gas assessed property value, which translates into property tax revenues in the borough.
And so I guess what my question is, does that sort of doom growth on the Kenai Peninsula?
No. It doesn't doom growth on the Kenai Peninsula for a couple of reasons. I mean, we are going to go through, and we are in the midst of a recession in Alaska, and that's driven in part by private sector, because oil industry reduced their spending when the price of oil went to $30 a barrel, and it's still reduced, and decisions that they're making now for the immediate future are partly dependent on what happens in the long term, or what they anticipate to happen in the long term for oil and gas. But the other thing is, and one of the things that we've been talking about in context with the state budget, is that we have to compete now for oil and gas investment in Alaska with the lower 48. There's a lot of oil in the Permian Basin in Texas, and Eagle Ford in Texas, and the Bakken in North Dakota, and Marcellus over on the East Coast is a big gas find, and they're doing fracking, and it's cheaper to develop it. It's closer to the infrastructure because you don't have to build pipelines or ship it through pipelines, etc. So it's closer to the infrastructure, and so that's what we have to compete with now, and that's important in the debate that's happening now at the state level to keep in mind, because we have to compete in order to get investment in oil and gas in Alaska. And by competing, that means that we can't put 100% of the burden anymore on oil and gas to cover all other aspects of the economy. That's why broad-based taxes are being talked about. It's not to support spending at the government level. It's to sort of make sure that we have a strong economic base in Alaska for the long term. It's really a focus on the long term, not the short term.
Again, Borough Mayor Mike Navar joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation, along with his chief of staff, Larry Pursley. We were talking about healthcare a little bit ago, and now moving on to oil and gas and sort of what that landscape looks like and what the future of that industry looks like here on the Kenai Peninsula. If you would like to jump in on the conversation, we'd love to hear your questions as well. 690-1687 is the number. Again, 690-1687. And I guess that's a great lead-in to talk about sort of where we are with the AK LNG project, and I'll come at this from sort of the most recent headlines that I've been reading, and people were kind of the project itself is going through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission part of the process, the FERC process, and that's an opportunity for a lot of groups to weigh in on whether they think the project's good idea, bad idea. And so some of the recent headlines, or a lot of environmental groups are throwing their two cents in on some of the risks involved in a project of this scope and this scale. And Larry, a question for you is, where, just sort of bring us up to speed, where are we at on this thing, and are we a whole lot further along than we were a year or two ago?
Well, I guess we're further along in that the state, since the companies dropped out of the project, the state has applied to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to start the environmental impact statement process. So we're further along in that they've started that. The federal regulators have not yet responded. They received the application. They've got to look through it and basically send it, well, not so much send it back, but send the state a list of what's missing. You know, there's information that they still need. They're going to have to request that additional information. That state will have to respond. Once the state fills in the gap, then the clock will start, if you will, on that EIS preparation. Realistically, if the state really wants to proceed through the EIS, and if the state appropriates the money that it will take to go through the EIS process, I think easily it could be 2 or 3 years for that environmental impact statement.
One of the things that prompted me to ask, are we any further along than we were a couple of years ago? Because obviously, you know, tons of paperwork has been done. There's boots on the ground. There's lots of stuff happening all the time. But in reading through some of the things that have been filed, I noticed one thing that FERC has been sent is some correspondence from the city of Valdez. You know, the idea that where the end of this line is going to be still isn't 100% settled is what makes me prompt. Where exactly are we at in this with billions of dollars being invested?
Well, in terms of the Valdez issue, certainly Valdez has wanted the gas line ever since it got the oil terminal in the 70s. That's no surprise. So any environmental impact statement, as anyone who's read those things knows, they look at alternatives. Mm-hmm. They look at what is the preferred alternative? What is the no option alternative? So the EIS was going to have to look at the Nikiski alternative, the Valdez alternative, the west side of Cook Inlet alternative. It was going to look at those anyhow, which you've got the city of Valdez is waving their hands saying, well, we want you to look extra hard at Valdez. The project sponsors, Exxon, BP, and Conoco, before the state took over, took a hard look at Valdez and gave a lot of reasons why it didn't make their final choice. The state has seconded that motion. The state, through the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, has said Nikiski is a better site for a lot of reasons. There's no perfect site, but it's much better. Valdez has a lot of problems. So the EIS will look at all of those issues. Available land, terrain, wetlands, pipeline routing, availability of transportation to the site. So Valdez was going to be there as an option, whether or not the city of Valdez filed a motion. It just means you've got an advocate through that process who's going to keep tapping everyone on the shoulder saying, don't forget us.
And lots of shoulders to be tapped and lots of messages to get out throughout this whole process, which, as you say, is going to be another couple of years.
It could easily be 2 or 3 years. I was looking yesterday. There's an LNG plant under construction on Chesapeake Bay in Maryland, a place called Cove Point. And it was an existing LNG import terminal. The owner decided they wanted to, since there's no one importing LNG into the U.S. at the moment with all the shale gas, they wanted to add a liquefaction, an export terminal to the site. So very small site, 130 acres. What we're looking at here is 900 acres. They had a very small pipeline connection. We have 800 miles. So you look at that little project in Maryland, no pipeline, small footprint, existing terminal, they just want to add liquefaction to it. That EIS took a year and a half. And this thing in Alaska is an 800-mile pipeline, the largest liquefaction natural gas project in America. It's going to take much longer for the EIS process.
Certainly no fast way around that. And you know, things that you think about back to when the original pipeline was built, and there are just so many more interested parties along the route who want to have a say in how things go down. Yeah.
Right. And the Governor Walker had written President Trump back in February and asked a long list of expedited fast track review and I don't want to say environmental shortcuts because that sounds pejorative, but waivers and exemptions on some environmental issues, wetlands mitigation, permit fees to federal pipeline safety regulators. The intent, certainly on the governor's behalf, was to speed this along. But the problem, I think, on a national level, on an EIS level, when you start looking for shortcuts in the environmental review process, I think you attract unwanted attention that's actually going to slow you down in the long run.
And on that note, we will take a short break. Again, you're tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. It's the Kenai Conversation. We've got Borough Mayor Mike Navarre in the studio this morning, along with his Chief of Staff, Larry Persley. Tons to talk about. We'd love to hear from you. 690-1687 is the number. We're going to take a short break. Stay with us. And we're back. Thanks for sticking with us. It's the Kenai Conversation here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, talking about healthcare, borough economics, oil and gas economics, and how those affect the Kenai Peninsula Borough. We've got Borough Mayor Mike Navarre in the studio with us, along with his Chief of Staff, Larry Persley. If you'd like to jump in on the conversation, or if you have questions, 690-1687 is the number. Again, 690-1687. And before we grabbed a quick break, Larry, we were talking about sort of where the AKLNG project is and how that's all working out and some of the challenges that are going to be coming up over the next few years to keep that project. And I'm wondering, you know, the longer a project like this sort of hangs on the regulatory, whatever you want to call it, hangs in the regulatory balance and is going through the process, the economics on the ground can change dramatically over those years that things are going through. And I'm wondering what your sense is of the economics of this project. Are they holding up? Is it still easy for the folks, for the companies and for the state of Alaska who are invested so heavily in this? Is it still an easy case for them to remain invested and see it go forward?
Well, I don't know. The state, you know, the state wants it, right? I mean,
right.
That's what's the driving
right.
factor. The state wants it, wants the jobs, the tax and royalty revenues, the companies.
It wants the cheap natural gas,
right,
too.
The companies backed off last year because after spending more than $500 million over the last 3 years just on this project, companies said the market's not there. This project is not in positive numbers, and we don't want to spend any more money on it. The state said, oh, we're still ambitious. We'll spend our money. And the company said, great, spend your money. Let us know how it goes. Right now, the market does not need an Alaska LNG project. There are multiple far less risky, less costly LNG projects out there in the world. I think eventually our time will come, but only when the project is a good investment risk and it's not there yet. So you can do the environmental work, you can do the permitting, it's not wasted. You're still going to need that data, but right now the numbers, I don't think, are there for the project. There's just too much LNG out in the world that's cheaper and projects that can be built that are less risky than this one, but hopefully this one's time will come.
And less, you know, the saying that the economics aren't necessarily there for private investment to bring this project to the fore. Mayor Navarre, I'm curious what your sense is of the state being, I mean, given the economic circumstances that the state of Alaska is in, is there any remote possibility that people would ever be willing to take on more of this to make it happen?
Well, key component of having the state as the lead in the project now, and this was pointed out by the companies when they pulled out, is that, and they haven't pulled out because they have a lot of the gas that's trapped up on the North Slope. They have a financial incentive to try to get that gas to market also, but it's got to be economical. One of the things that may help the project is if it's determined to be tax exempt under federal statutes as a result, or IRS rules, as a result of the state owning the project. That could add significant economic value to the project and reduce the cost of construction and operating of that facility. Maybe not the overall cost of doing it, but the tax status would mean that the tax savings would allow for maybe a project to go forward. You know, there's talk from time to time about trying that these windows that open up in the international markets for additional gas supply. And if you look at the international supply and demand charts, what you'll see is that there's always windows opening and closing because it's the nature of the market system. When demand gets higher, because supplies go down, somebody comes in with another supply. If they can make money, they're going to interject their supply into the chain. So, and so that happens all the time. There's gas fields and gas export facilities that currently, you know, eventually they're going to run out of gas or decline in the amount of gas that they can supply. And when that happens, opportunities present themselves. So really, for our project, what we should be doing is a couple of things, in my opinion. Recognizing that the world economy right now is stagnant at best and slow growth at the very best, I guess. Our biggest supply opportunities are still Asian, either Japanese markets or the Chinese markets. And so there'll be opportunities at some point. So we need to, I think, sort of keep this project sort of on simmer so that we, when an opportunity looks like it's presenting itself, the heat can be turned back up and we can bring the project online and ready to go in a fairly quick fashion so that we don't miss opportunities might present themselves. But I think it's going to be difficult in the short term just because there's a huge glut on the world market. There's a lot of projects that are probably better situated than this one. Although, you know, one of the things about the Asian markets and even the Chinese markets is balance of trade issues, et cetera, that may factor into it from a national policy perspective that might help us. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainties. At some point, the economics, and we've seen it over time, the economics catch up to it, and then somebody else steps in and either supplies that demand that's out there, or what we saw since 2008, really, is the international economy was almost in collapse.
Right.
And the result of that is when economies contract, demand for energy goes down also. And so what we're seeing now is a glut in the market that will ease at some point. We don't know when that's going to be, but we need to be prepared and get some of the issues that are always going to be out there resolved now, so that we're not starting from scratch on a project when the opportunity presents itself in the future.
Well, I think another question to go along with that then is at the state level, how big is the appetite for lawmakers in Juneau now and into the future, which is impossible to tell. What's their appetite to, as you say, keep this project on simmer, keep investing in it so that those opportunities can be taken advantage of when they pop up, which is unknown.
Well, the State Gas Corporation has about $100 million from previous appropriations to spend on projects. The State Senate was making noise and actually voted to take away half that money, but it looks like the House will give it back. I think the political appetite in the legislature is to say to the Gas Corporation, you have $100 million we gave you before. Use that wisely, as the mayor said, to advance your permits, do work that will have value should the time come when this project goes ahead, but don't come back and ask us for any more money. I don't think there's any appetite in the legislature to write more checks than they've already written, but advance it as far as you can with the $100 million. Do your permitting work so we're in a better position should the market change to move ahead quicker. But I don't think anybody wants to go order steel pipe and stack it up and hope that someday you use it.
Right. That's maybe looking a bit too far into the future with big, bright eyes. Again, joined with Borough Mayor Mike Navarre and his Chief of Staff, Larry Persley, in the studio this morning on the Kenai Conversation. 690-1687 is the number if you'd like to jump in. Again, 690-1687. And want to move on. We've mentioned briefly the annual budget negotiations and discussions are going on now at the borough level, and had a first public hearing of the fiscal year 2018 budget at the last meeting. June 6th is the next one, and I'll open this up to you, Mayor Navarre. It seems like a pretty status quo budget, but I'm curious, what are you seeing at the state level and federal level and things that are affecting the Kenai Peninsula borough budget right now?
Well, we always get concerned with the federal level of whether or not we're going to get some of the federal funds we get for either forestry receipts or payment in lieu of taxes, et cetera. But those have been fairly consistent. We have a lot of allies in other states, western states mostly, for continuing that. So I'm fairly confident in that. What we've seen at the state level, though, is significant impacts, really. We've seen revenue sharing drop by about $900,000. And it's expected to continue down. We've seen a couple of million dollars drop in that in the last 5 years. And what that means is that either that revenue source has to be made up at the local level through local taxes, or you find ways to reduce the budget. Over the last couple of years, we have seen the borough budget, actually the general fund portion of the budget, meaning the departments that are general government departments, we've seen that reduced a little bit over the last couple of years. But our biggest expenditure at the local level is the same as it is at the state level, and that's for education. About two-thirds of the cost of education are paid for at the state level, and we pay for about a third of it here locally. It's our biggest expenditure. It's about 67 or 68% of our overall borough budget goes to general fund budget goes to education. It's our most important expenditure. It's something that I think is our biggest responsibility, and that really is what drives a lot of our local budget. This year, my proposal is about $1.5 million under the cap. We're about $3 million under the cap now. The school district made some reductions in their budget and asked us to fund to the cap. We told them we weren't going to be able to do it because of the sort of the overall economic situation. Even increasing education budget by $1.5 million means that long term, we're going to need additional revenues. And that's because we've seen some federal, some state dollars that have been declined in revenue sharing. We've expended more for education. A few years ago, we increased the education budget by several million dollars in one fell swoop. Our fund balance we're going to see a decline. In fact, we saw a decline last year. We'll see another decline this year. That means that we need to increase revenues in some fashion. And that's why I proposed last year increasing the sales tax cap from 500 to 1,000. That went to the voters last October. It failed. That would have been, I think, about a little over $3 million in additional revenue to the borough. Because that failed, then it really means that the only option we have available to us is a mill levy increase. And so I'm proposing a half mill increase in this year's mill levy in order to support our budget on an annual basis so that we don't spend down our fund balance. You can spend fund balance on a year-to-year basis, but you can't do it every single year or you'll run out of money fairly quickly, and then it will precipitate a very significant increase in the mill rate. So I'm proposing a small half mill increase. Other options that might be available would be to go back to the voters again and ask to raise the cap on sales tax. That would put the burden on sales taxpayers rather than property tax owners. Six of one, half dozen the other. You have to make revenue decisions that correspond with your spending decisions. That's what you have to do if you're going to be responsible. And I don't want to leave it for the next administration. Nobody ever wants to have to increase taxes. And I don't want to leave a hole in the budget that will make it a certainty that whoever comes in follows me will have to increase the mill levy or sales tax.
And I'm sorry.
I was going to mention, go ahead. By borough code, all sales tax revenues have to go to education.
Correct.
So whatever, and that's not enough to cover the borough's contribution. So whatever the borough wants to contribute, needs to contribute to, or the community wants to contribute, got to come from property tax. If sales tax isn't enough, and sales tax covers a little bit more than half of the borough's contribution?
Right, a little bit more than that. And Larry's raised a good point, because we've done a couple of things. One is that the voters instituted a sales tax holiday on food, I guess. And so 9 months of the year, we don't charge for non-preferred food items. and that reduced the receipts in sales tax, I think by about $1.3 million, I think is the number. And then additionally, if you recall, back in about 2012 or 2013, we also increased the exemption on personal residences from $20,000 to $50,000. That, I think, was about, it seems to me it was a couple of million dollars at least. And so when we make those decisions, they're not really recognized at the time, but those are tax decreases that we saw. And now, because of expenditure decisions for what is our most important responsibility, education, means that we have to look at additional revenue sources, finding additional revenues.
And these are tough conversations to have, because it's part of this overall trend as we're looking at things sort of contracting a little bit, that more and more of the burden is put on local communities to pony up more and more substantial percentages of cost for these major things, whether you're talking about education, healthcare, infrastructure projects, all of those things. The impetus becomes more and more on the local community. And I'm just, I guess, kind of a big idea question is, you know, the next 10, 20 years, do you see that changing? Do you see a big change on the Kenai Peninsula of people embracing that? I guess I'll put a nice spin on it and say the extra responsibility, but do you see people fighting a lot of trying to maintain the services they've got, but with fewer funds to pay for them?
Well,
big question.
I guess long-term, you know, Alaska is really a fairly young state. We have a lot of natural resources, which include oil and gas, mining, but also fishing and timber and recreation that are going to play into our overall economy. So I think we've got a very, very bright future. It's just in the short term, we're going to have some contraction. And what's important is that we get a fiscal structure in place at the state level that allows us to thrive in any types of, fluctuations in different parts of that economy. With oil and gas dropping now, it's about $50 a barrel, but when it would drop down to $30 a barrel, you know, you can't add additional burden to the oil and gas industry, or you will put a damper on investment in Alaska. We need the investment in Alaska in the long term in order to make sure that we keep the pipeline open, that we keep the jobs and the economy associated with it. And it's why the Kenai Peninsula, I think, is as well situated as anyone. We've got as diverse economy as any place in the state. We've got fishing, tourism, fishing, commercial, subsistence, and sport. We've got oil and gas. We've got a lot of recreational opportunities down here, and so we're fairly diversified. We've also got a lot of companies who are based here who work in other areas of the state, either construction or oil and gas on the North Slope, service industry associated. So we've got, I think, a pretty diverse economy here.
And it looks like we've got a caller coming in right now. Good morning. Welcome to the conversation. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Dale.
Morning, Dale. What's your question?
Well, I do have a couple of questions. could you explain to us, what did these politicians do down in Juneau to tighten their belt? Why don't they not get paid on this overtime? They're making, what, almost $300 a day? Am I right?
I think that's high, but... But they do get per diem while they're in Juneau for the session and the special session. Yep. There's a lot of tough decisions that have to be made. And right now there's some clash in sort of philosophies about, what revenues are going to be in the future, whether or not you need a broad-based tax, or whether you can just spend earnings or reserves, how long you can spend those reserves for, and whether or not sort of oil and gas prices and the revenues associated will catch up enough over the next several years to eliminate the need for a broad-based tax. And what level of spending should there be in the state? You know, there's been significant reductions at the state level. I know people say, well, no, there haven't, but there have. A lot of it was in the capital expenditures, that's true, but they've also made some reductions within the agencies and the departments, and we're seeing impacts from that in terms of public safety, even some maintenance issues. And in addition, the existing budget that they're talking about now, they're really just trying to cobble together enough to get the state through. They're ignoring things like capital budgets and capital needs. And I don't mean frivolous needs. What I mean is there's a lot of facilities in the state that are owned by the state that are aging facilities or that are in need of maintenance. There's an estimate that there's an excess of,
A couple of billion dollars
in deferred maintenance on facilities in the state. And that's significant. And those don't go away. If you don't do the preventative maintenance and the maintenance on those facilities, what ends up is they deteriorate to such an extent that they have to be replaced, and that's even more expensive. And so you've got to invest some in protecting and maintaining your infrastructure. We have the same thing here at the Kenai Peninsula Borough. The Kenai Borough building is 47 years old or something like that. It needs some work. It needs some maintenance. The heating ventilation system there is its original system. The boiler is the original one. There's a lot of work that gets done every year in order to just to keep those things operating. You know, when the heat goes off or cooling in the summertime, we don't have air conditioning, but we do have air exchange system. That needs to be upgraded, and it's going to be expensive to upgrade. The estimate's about a little over $5 million. I will probably propose that be put on the ballot for October and let the voters decide whether they want to do it or not. And then I'll go out and advocate for it, because you can't just ignore. You can't ignore that maintenance. At some point, those systems are just going to collapse or stop working, and then you're going to be in a crisis mode to replace them, and that makes it even more expensive. So you have to be responsible about identifying where the necessary expenditure are going to be and make those choices. And same thing is true in Juneau. The decisions that they're trying to make, if you look at the overall state budget, there's really only a couple of areas that account for most of the budget. One is education. That's about $1.3 billion. Health and Social Services are $1.2 billion. Those are the two big components. And those have direct impacts on people's lives. And so either their educational opportunities or, in the case of health, their access to health care. So those are important. Those are tough choices. And right now the legislature is sort of colliding between different types of philosophies about how to best address the state's needs.
There's certainly big questions, and Dale, thank you so much for that question. And we've got just a few minutes left here, and we started off pretty zoomed in on the Kenai Peninsula. We've kind of broadened that scope of this discussion, which is great. I love hearing how all these different things work together to affect things here on the Kenai Peninsula. But just in the closing few minutes, Mayor Navarre, your term's kind of winding down here, and I'm curious. As that winds down, what are some things that you're hoping to accomplish over the next few months, and what would you say to an incoming administration? What are some things that you would recommend to kind of look out for? And here's some things that, boy, if I were in your shoes, I'd really want to be prepared for this discussion coming up, whatever that might be.
Well, one of the things that we're working on, and I think we're fairly close to submitting to the Assembly, is a new lease and operating agreement for Central Peninsula Hospital. That one expires at the end of this year, and I'd like to get that completed before I leave office. The other thing is why I say I'll probably put the renovations to the heating system of the borough building on the ballot in October, so that I can advocate for it, and if people want, they can point to me rather than to the next administration or someone else for trying to spend money on a public facility. But the reality is, it's got to be done at some point. Interestingly enough, when I was mayor from 96 to 99, that was on the list then, and it's never been done since then. We had significant problems. If you walk around that building in the middle of winter, you'll see space heaters all over the place because there's not enough adequate heat in the building with the aging system. And so it needs to be updated anyway. So that's something that I'd like to see accomplished. And then, you know, whether we do it through a mill rate increase or whether we do it through a change to sales tax code or to the cap on sales taxes, I want to make sure that revenues are equal to expenditures on an annual basis so that we don't spend down our fund balance. That's something that fund balances should be used to sort of fill in year-to-year fluctuations, not as a long-term source of revenues. It won't work. It's not sustainable. And so I want to make sure that revenues are equal to our expenditures on an annual basis. And then what I would say to a new administration coming in when we go through the transition, and that is that, you know, be cautious about making promises about either tax cuts or expenditure cuts. What you need to do is take a good hard look at the borough budget, the components of the borough budget, the responsibilities that you have, and then make make responsible decisions about the level of expenditures. And I think if you do that, it will bode well for the future of the Kenai Borough.
And one final question before we wrap up. Any endorsements?
It's too early. The seats, it's interestingly enough, there's a number of people who've announced that they're running for borough mayor now. There's three folks who've announced they're running, but it doesn't even open for filing until August 1st. So we won't know who the candidates are until August 15th when the closing date is. So I'm going to sort of keep my powder dry for now.
Well, Mayor Navarre, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Larry Pursley also in with us this morning. Thank you both so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Shaylin.
Thank you.
And that will do it for this week's episode of the Kenai Conversation. I want to thank everyone who called in, and thank you so much for tuning in. We will be back with you next week here on KDLL Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Everybody, have a great morning.